Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, honoring Arbor Day on April 26th, with an ongoing commitment to sustainable stewardship and conservation of Missouri's forests. Choosewood.com.
Welcome to St. Louis on the Air. I'm Sarah Fenske. 100 years ago this month, American women gained the right to vote. That right was a long time coming, and the fight to secure it involved many, many women, some of them right here in St. Louis. And that struggle is the subject of a new exhibition at the Missouri History Museum. It opened last weekend. It's called Beyond the Ballot, St. Louis and Suffrage. And joining me today to talk about it is Katie Moon. She's the exhibits manager at the Missouri History Museum. Katie, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me.
And we're also joined today by Elizabeth Eichmann. She's a doctoral student in American Studies at St. Louis University who has also studied this issue. Elizabeth, welcome.
Thank you so much for having me.
So, Katie, I want to start with you. August of 1920, this was a huge month for women. What finally happened that month that gave women this right that men had enjoyed at that point for hundreds of years?
So that was actually when the 34th state finally ratified the 19th Amendment. So Missouri had signed it in, the Missouri governor signed it in July of 1919, but then it took a whole other year to get 34 states.
And when we say, you know, they had to ratify it and it took a year, like what was the idea? There had to be individual votes within all of these states to sign off on this thing?
Right. So it's presented to Congress and then each governor had to sign off on the amendment. So the House of Representatives had to sign off on it in each state. And so it had a state by state vote and it required a majority of 2/3. And that was 34 states at that point.
And so Missouri, we were not dead last in this.
No, we were the 11th state. pretty early.
This sounds remarkable for us. We should take some pride in this.
Right.
So, Elizabeth, I know your research has looked at a St. Louis woman who fought so hard on this. What do we know about the significance of St. Louis in the early part of the very long road that got us to this point?
Yeah, so St. Louis was so active in early suffrage movements. So we're talking like mid-19th century. So decades before the 19th Amendment finally passes in 1920. But so much activity, multiple different suffrage associations, women writing petitions, fighting for this here in St. Louis and joining national movements. We hosted national conventions here in St. Louis, lots of activity.
Now, I know last year you had an internship at the old courthouse downtown, and you ended up doing extensive research on a suffragist from the 19th century. This is Virginia Minor. Who was she, and what is she remembered for today?
Yeah, so she was a woman who wasn't born here in St. Louis, but moved here at a very young age, and is most well known for a case that went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court in 1875, but started right here in the St. Louis Circuit Court in 1872 at the old courthouse, when in late 1872 she attempted to register to vote. And she was denied registration, and her husband, just a couple weeks later, went into the old courthouse, filed a joint suit per Missouri law at the time. Minor couldn't sue on her own. And that case ultimately went all the way up to the U.S. Supreme Court.
And what was the legal argument that she and, I guess, her husband had to be involved that they were making in this lawsuit?
Yeah, so their entire case was based on the premise that the 14th Amendment, which in 1868 basically said that those born and naturalized in the U.S. are citizens. It was designed to grant citizenship to those who were formerly enslaved. Mm-hmm. But they argued, if you're born in the United States and you're guaranteed citizenship, as a citizen, you have the right to vote. So basically, their whole legal argument was that women already had the right to vote per the 14th Amendment. And they basically just said, hey, go out and take advantage of a right that you already have. So they argue this all the way through the lower circuit court, Missouri Supreme Court, U.S. Supreme Court. And it was ultimately decided by the U.S. Supreme Court in unanimous decision that women were citizens, but citizenship did not necessarily guarantee enfranchisement. So citizenship was not tied to voting rights. And they reiterated that the 14th Amendment was meant for recently freed slaves. So, you know, that sort of made that final decision about the relationship between citizenship and voting rights and collapsed their entire case's argument.
So this was a unanimous loss at the highest court of the land. Did she give up at that point? What else do we know about her life and her pursuit of this?
Yeah, what's so great is she didn't. I mean, you would think that that would be like devastating, and I'm sure there was like a moment of sadness, you know, but she was so active and she continued to hold like leadership positions. You know, she wasn't just like a member of groups, she was the president of multiple groups in St. Louis and Missouri, and held those positions up until 2 years before her death in 1894. So she went on lecture tours, she gathered petitions, she served the National Suffrage Association. So she certainly did not give up after this decision.
So Virginia Minor's story, it's a fascinating story, but it's just one part of this much bigger story. And Katie Moon, I know you researched so many St. Louis women's stories in preparation for this exhibit that just opened at the Missouri History Museum. Such a big story to tell. How did you go about framing women's right to vote for the Missouri History Museum?
Sure. So we did, you know, we had the challenge of trying to figure out how do we tell this suffrage story, you know, that people would be interested in and to really honor the women who are a part of it. And I think there's this misconception that, you know, women's history doesn't start until they got the vote. And we really wanted to kind of explode that misconception. And so looking at the history of women and their influence on the city from day one. And the first half of the exhibit is dedicated to 32 women who influenced the city and contributed to the city before 1920, and also providing some context of where women were coming from, what challenges they faced, kind of what they were doing to lead them to say, we deserve the vote and we should have it because we're contributing members of society and we're on equal footing. And so we look at 32 women, you know, everything from Madame Chateau, who was, you know, the mother of St. Louis is what we usually call her, all the way to Fanny Sellins, who was a union organizer who was murdered in West Virginia in 1919 because of her union activity. Yeah, so we really cover the gamut, and then we dive into that actual suffrage story, which I believe starts with started in the early 19th century.
And sorry, you were saying it started with what in the early 19th century?
Freedom suits, which not a lot of people are familiar with, but Dred Scott and his wife, that was a freedom suit. So enslaved people in Missouri had the right by law to sue for their freedom if they thought they were unlawfully enslaved. And so it was a lot of women who took these cases to court and were arguing that they weren't property, that they were people, and that they had certain rights that they deserved. And I believe that that's really when the suffrage movement started in St. Louis.
And Katie, just to cut in here, unfortunately, we're having some problems with your phone line. So we are going to have hang up. Yeah, we're going to call you right back and we're going to get you reconnected to this conversation. I'm not sure exactly what's going on today, but there seems to be some low level technical problem plaguing us. So we will get Katie Moon, if you can just hang up there, of the Missouri History Museum. We'll get her right back with us. And in the meantime, Elizabeth Eichmann, who's a doctoral student in American Studies at St. Louis University. Elizabeth, you had mentioned some of these conventions that happen here. I understand St. Louis held the first national suffrage convention. How does that fit into some of this history we've been talking about here today, these freedom suits and these other quests to get women the right to vote?
Yeah. So in October of 1869, St. Louis hosted the first suffrage convention in the state, and certainly it's one of the earliest in the nation. And it was held at the Mercantile Library downtown. And both Virginia Minor and Susan B. Anthony, a name we all know well, were in attendance at this convention. And this first convention was, you know, really important and relevant to Virginia Minor's case, because it's during this convention that she and her husband Francis actually sort of introduce the idea for the legal basis of the case that they would eventually go and file a few years later. And this idea was published in Susan B. Anthony's newspaper, The Revolution. And they must have known in that moment when they reported on this at the convention that there was something great about the idea, that it was going to stick, because Susan B. Anthony actually had 10,000 additional copies of her newspaper, that one issue, that October issue, reprinted. So extra copies printed and circulated, because they must have had a feeling, you know, that this was a good idea, that they had something going for them there. So, and she had a national readership. So, you know, although this is a moment of our local history, it certainly had national repercussions. And, you know, in the years that followed immediately, women around the nation actually did take up their call to go and attempt to vote, or attempt to register to vote. So this also was not just happening in St. Louis. It was happening all across the nation.
She was started off this movement here. And in the meantime, Katie Moon, I understand you are back with us. Is that right?
I am back.
Great to hear your voice again.
I'm back.
Yes, no problem. This is life in the COVID-19 era. There's always phone connection problems. We can't have people here in person. So, Katie, you were talking about the freedom suits. We talked a bit about the first national suffrage convention here. And I understand that your new exhibit goes deep. You have a timeline, the pivotal decade leading up to the passage of this 19th Amendment that got ratified 100 years ago this month. What were some of the high points in those final years of just getting this thing across the finish line?
Right. So I think there's a lot that people have never heard. In 1914, the women of Missouri had submitted a petition to get suffrage on the state ballot. And so it actually went to a popular vote in November of 1914. And so I love what Elizabeth was saying about Virginia Minor, because these ladies didn't do anything without a strategy. Nothing ever happened by accident. And in 1914, they did a publicity push across the city, and they had their own stamps created. They had marketing materials, and so they really expected suffrage to pass by the state at that time, because states could also give women the right to vote. Unfortunately, the people that they talked to the most were people who were like them, you know, more upper class, more educated. And so unfortunately, they failed, and it didn't pass in 1914. The only ward that passed it was in the Central West End, Ward 28, and it failed the worst down in the brewery wards, because people were afraid that if women got the vote, that they would vote in prohibition, and they weren't wrong. we in the exhibit have a banner that the women used at that point, and we also have this great, it's called a voiceless speech, and it's almost like an early PowerPoint of these pages that they could turn that were written on, because these women were used to giving speeches, and so they could just stand in front of a crowd and flip these sheets. So 1914 was a pivotal year, and then 1916 was when St. Louis hosted the Democratic National Convention, and the women decided to hold what they called the Golden Lane Parade, which was known as the Walkless Talkless Parade, because they didn't actually march down the street. Instead, all of the delegates to the convention stayed at the Jefferson Hotel, which is still standing today. Now, it's the Jefferson Arms Hotel, Locust and Chestnut area. And so they all stayed there, but then had to walk down Locust to get to the Coliseum, which is where the convention was being held. And about 8,000 women from St. Louis and across the country stood on both sides of the street wearing white dresses, their votes for women sashes, and yellow umbrellas, and just stared down those delegates as they walked to the Coliseum.
Wow.
Yes. So imagine as a politician having these women who could be your mother, your grandmother, your daughter, just staring at you, basically saying, why is suffrage not on the ballot? Why do we not yet have this vote, 50 years after we started? And so they did put it on the ballot for that 1916 election. They put it on the platform, the presidential platform. And so it was really at that point that more and more men started supporting the suffrage movement. And so that the 1916 year was really kind of the climax of the suffrage movement in St. Louis.
My guests today are Katie Moon of the Missouri History Museum. Its exhibit on women's suffrage opened this past weekend. And we're also joined by Elizabeth Eichmann, a doctoral student in American Studies at St. Louis University. And if you're looking for another event to celebrate this milestone, in addition to the show at the History Museum, we did want to mention the National Women's Political Caucus, St. Louis Chapter, is having an event at Belle Fountain Cemetery on August 15th. Certified historic interpreter Ann Williams will be speaking in first person as Virginia Minor and reciting her testimony from the U.S. Senate Committee in 1889, in which she defends this strategy of women having the right to vote by the 14th Amendment. And those remarks will begin at 10 a.m. Lots more detail about that on our website, stlpublicradio.org. We need to take a quick break, but we'll be back shortly to continue this conversation. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio, 90.7 KWMU.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, honoring Arbor Day on April 26th with an ongoing commitment to sustainable stewardship and conservation of Missouri's forests. Choosewood.com.
And now back to our conversation. This month marks 100 years since women were granted the right to vote. That's the subject of an exhibition that opened last weekend at the Missouri History Museum. It's called Beyond the Ballot, St. Louis and Suffrage. And my guests today are Katie Moon, the exhibits manager at the Missouri History Museum, and Elizabeth Eichmann, a doctoral student at St. Louis University, who's done some in-depth research into St. Louis suffragist Virginia Minor. So Katie, right when we had to take that break there, we were talking about 1916, the Democratic Party convention in St. Louis that year. This seems to have provided a lot of momentum. How did it go from getting included in the party platform to getting across the finish line with this this amendment that had to be ratified?
So it really was the women convincing the men to share the vote with them. And so, wars are always horrible things, but women really used World War I as a way to prove themselves worthy of the vote, and it was another part of their strategy. And so it really was convincing these politicians and these men to start voting yes to suffrage. And so there was a double-pronged approach where, some groups of women were saying, we have to go state by state, and we have to convince the government of each state to pass these laws. And then there was another group saying, We need a federal amendment. And Susan B. Anthony actually wrote the 19th Amendment in 1875. And it was the same amendment that was introduced and passed in 1919 and 1920. So it was just a lot of strategic talking, a lot of convincing men in different ways that women deserve the right to vote. So There wasn't a magic pill. There wasn't a magic moment. It was really just these resolute women continuing to make progress. And, it's easy for us now to say, oh, well, of course, women got the vote in 1920. But for these women, they've been fighting for 50 years, and they still didn't know whether it was going to pass or not. Mm-hmm. And so just their resilience and their strength and their courage is just, it's amazing to me. And that all these women in St. Louis were just really committed to this movement and making it happen.
Elizabeth, it's fascinating to think about, as Katie just said, this amendment written back in 1875 and just kind of percolating for a quarter of a century and then another 20 years until it could finally get to a place where the men were ready to take action on this. So this is really Virginia Minor's generation that was leading the charge on this, and yet she died before women earned the right to vote. Do you think, did you get any sense in your research of whether she had hope in the end that they were going to ever get this thing across the finish line?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, so she dies in 1894. In 1890, at 66 years old, she became the president of the Missouri Equal Suffrage Association. So I don't think she would have been leading an organization like that, you know, if she didn't think that she that it would eventually happen. And one thing that made me smile and laugh a bit in my research was actually reading her will. So when she dies in 1894, she leaves $500 each to her nieces so long as they remain unmarried. They would only get the money if they didn't marry. And then she also left $1,000 to Susan B. Anthony. And those are the only three people specifically named, other than a couple of relatives, in her will. And she says that she leaves $1,000 to Anthony for all that she has done for women and to support the cause. So, you know, she, you know, wrote that not knowing if she would die before it happened, but obviously wanted to either thank Anthony for the work that she had done to see it through, or that so that she could continue the work.
That's a touching bequest there.
Yeah.
And such a great celebration looking back 100 years ago. But, you know, it is also very important to mention, as celebratory as August of 1920 was for women, white women were the main beneficiaries of this because of ongoing discriminatory voting practices. Katie, is that something that within your museum exhibit, Beyond the Ballot, is that something that you had to grapple with?
It really was, and to figure out how to present that, and you know, it's interesting because it again goes back to the Virginia Minor case. You know, the court saying just because you're a citizen doesn't mean that you have the right to vote, and that allowed for Jim Crow laws and, you know, educational requirements and land ownership requirements, and so. You know, the 19th Amendment took away the hurdle of gender from voting, but it didn't take away the hurdles of, you know, race and other voting requirements. And some of the documentation from the suffrage movement is troubling. And, I, you know, I think as we tell history, the more complex it is, the more interesting it is. And so, you know, it wasn't until the suffragists expanded their audience outside of people who agreed with them, you know, or who looked like them, that it actually moved forward. But yeah, I think it's definitely a conversation to be had, and unfortunately still something that we struggle with today. And so a lot of the challenges that we were facing 100 years ago, we're still facing today. And I don't think we can shy away from that. And so in a lot of ways, it's a celebration, but it's also, you know, a way to reexamine where we are right now. And we really try to get visitors to do that in the exhibit.
Katie, you used the word troubling. Was this, were there things that the suffragists were working on where they were basically trying to rise up on the backs of other people rather than pulling them along with them?
Yes, I think so. I think they were put in a hard place with the 15th Amendment, which gave essentially gave African American men the right to vote. It split the suffrage movement in two, and because some women said, "We'll support this amendment because our time is coming," and another group said, "We can't support this amendment because they don't include women in it." And so it really split what the suffragists were working towards, and it created room for them to really how do I want to put this to speak badly about African Americans and people of color. there's a document that we have in the exhibit that is a statistical flyer that basically says, you know, if we give African-American women the vote, it's okay, because based on the numbers, it won't upset the balance of power.
Hmm.
And so, you know, not every suffragist was a racist, but there were definitely parts of the movement that are troubling, you know, and that we don't agree with. You know, these women were kind of doing everything that they could to get their agenda forward, and they made some poor decisions along the way.
And it sounds like that's something that the exhibit is frank about. You're giving people that information of here is the warts and all history of this movement.
We really try to do that. And, you know, my goal as a historian is to say, you know, we can't ignore that these things happened, but we can look at them and we can use them to have conversations and talk about how things are different and talk about how things are the same and really have that dialogue. Because if we pretend like they never happened, we can't really talk about them. And so we want to be honest, but we also want to provide a context for people to have those conversations.
And I do want to talk here in just the last couple minutes we have today about another exhibit that is coming in the future. And that has to do with the research you did at the old courthouse, Elizabeth. I understand there's now an exhibit being planned that will focus specifically on Virginia Minor. What are the plans there?
Yeah, so planned in the future at the old courthouse on the second floor rotunda, actually where the library is now. The hope is to turn that into exhibition space centered around Virginia Minor, because both her lower circuit court and Missouri Supreme Court cases were heard at the old courthouse, one of which occurred in that very room that's now the library. So, and then expanding the conversation out to speak a bit more about suffrage activism in St. Louis, and hopefully make it a permanent exhibition. So that's in part what some of the research that I was doing was for, is gathering that so that it could be used to one day support that exhibition. So
that's
cross our fingers.
That's great to hear. And as we're coming up on this 100th anniversary of the ratification of the 19th Amendment, Elizabeth, I'm wondering, what do you find yourself reflecting on, looking back on all you've researched and all you know about this movement?
Well, really what Katie said something earlier in the interview, I think, is that change doesn't just happen. Mm. You know, it, and sometimes it can be an excruciatingly hard-fought, long process. But, you know, like she was saying, it these things don't just spring from nowhere, right? It takes careful planning, and it's also no accident. So just thinking about the possibilities for where we can go from where we are now, and thinking that, you know, change doesn't just happen, and then it takes everyone doing their part and working towards creating a more just world and community.
Well, Elizabeth Eichmann, a doctoral student at St. Louis University, I want to thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me.
And Katie Moon of the Missouri History Museum, congratulations on opening this exhibit, and thank you so much for joining us to talk about it.
Thank you so much. This has been great.
And we do want to mention that Missouri History Museum exhibit is free. It's open to the public, but you do have to pre-register. That's just a COVID-19 precaution. There's also a number of rules in place, and you can check all that out on the Missouri History Museum's website. This is St. Louis on the Air on St. Louis Public Radio. That's 90.7 KWMU.
Support comes from the Missouri Forest Products Association, honoring Arbor Day on April 26th, with an ongoing commitment to sustainable stewardship and conservation of Missouri's forests. ChooseWood.com.